This is Eric from Comic Book Queers, and you're listening
no plugs.
To
an intro.
Girl, you just got plugged.
Yeah, let him right. plug.
You're listening to episode 201 of Around Comics.
Thanks for fitting our name in.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. Like these fine folks.
Yes.
Hey!
One
make more noise.
It's a cast of a couple.
Well, you know, we had someone from Australia that was actually here.
Yeah, and he's got a much cooler itinerary than hanging out and watching us do a damn podcast.
He's like, going to Sao Paulo, sorry.
Yeah, he's going to Sao Paulo, New There's Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
That's very different.
It's a suburb.
Hey, folks, I'm Christopher Niesman, and joining me is, first of all, the prodigal son returns once again.
What's up, bitches?
Mr. Brian Salazar is back.
I'm back. I had nothing to do on a Friday, so I wanted to get away from my family and come to my
other family.
Your little
your
home. You had been reading some comics that you actually wanted to talk about.
These are the kids you can't abuse.
Really. Yes, these are the kids I can beat on, and no one will arrest me.
No, he talks to me. I know he's got stuff to talk about, because he talks to me today at work. He comes to me, he's like, what the fuck is Grant Morrison doing? I can't wrap my head around this shit. So
I think it's retarded.
All right, next
like
is...
Punch Grant Morrison in the taint.
I would like to abuse him like a stepchild.
Next like is the host of Tom versus the Flash now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You started Tom versus the Flash?
Yeah. How far into it are you?
Like four issues in.
I was gonna listen, but I couldn't find a copy of the Flash.
Doesn't matter, man.
I don't need.
I explain it to you.
Oh, well, in that case.
I do it all. I don't depend on. Half the people that listen to me are poor, illiterate people, probably. Human refuse.
Mr. Tom Caters, how you doing?
I'm good.
All right. Yeah. Wedding planning?
Yeah. Woo.
Next is the voice of Word Balloon, Mr. John Suntress.
Hello again, everybody.
Speak in your real voice, John.
Hey, it's the Funky Phantom.
Oh, God.
I do that for our friends that are joining us today.
Which one of those friends is one of the co-hosts of the Comic Book Queers, a fellow Chicagoan and podcaster, Eric. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
You're talking so much quieter than you were when we did the voice.
That was not the level you registered.
Way to throw off the sound check.
Hello. Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
He's like, hey.
Fucking low talker.
Here's my
talk.
My velvety voice.
You're not, in the U.S. Open. You're not on the 18th hole here.
Hey.
Well, this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. We're waiting for the trade. Has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected edition stuff that you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases. You go away, and then you come back, and you always do.
That's why I come here.
What
am I supposed to stop it?
You can pick up essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free.
Ship to you from beautiful Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Are they in Fort, Fort Wayne, right?
From Indiana.
Oh, yeah. Cameron's in Fort Wayne. No kidding.
Yes,
that's cool.
Yeah, Three Rivers.
Yeah, they've got a.
Hey, Fort Wayne, what's up?
Fort Wayne. Shout out to Fort Wayne.
My family lived in Fort Wayne. That was a long time ago.
Oh yeah, Fort Wayne up to no good.
Right now, InStockTrades.com is offering our new book club selection, Tom Beland's True Story, Swear to God, Archive Volume 1, for a fantastic 47% off the cover price. You cannot beat that. It's the first 17 issues of the six-time Eisner-nominated series are collected here and available to you for a mere
beautiful love story.
$10.59, and That's all at InStockTrades.com.
Sal can't read love stories because his heart turned to stone a couple years ago.
Where's the part where you kill somebody?
I live a love story every day, Tom. I don't need to read about
it. You and Chris?
Yeah, it's
beautiful. Me and Chris at work every day.
That's beautiful.
Madly in love. An abusive relationship.
Yeah. All right. Well, I tell you, we've got one more of our continuing announcement.
Disgusting.
You've heard for the last couple of weeks about the Windy City Comic Con, and
you'll hear about it for another couple of weeks.
Yeah, probably.
I'm touching myself. I can't wait.
My partner in crime and a co-conspirator for the Windy City Comic Con is here, Mr. Salazar. Well, why don't you tell people all about it?
Our own comics is proud to present the Windy City Comic Con. Join us on October 25th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Center on Halsted, just two blocks from Wrigley Field in the heart of Chicago's Wrigleyville neighborhood.
It's in the heart of something else.
You all need to know before you get there. It's the gay neighborhood.
It's not.
This Monday event will bring together the best comic book retailers, publishers, and creators in the Midwest. The area's best retailers will be offering great deals on new issues, collected editions. Everything's collected editions. Yep. Statues, games, toys, apparel, and tons of back issues. Meet some of the Midwest's best talent, including Gene Ha, Don Kramer, Mike Norton, Chris Burnham, Will Pfeiffer, Bill Reinhold, Doug Klaba, Rich Kozlowski, Jeffrey Round, Tim Seeley, and many, 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 many more. Book your plans now to attend the Windy City Comic Con on October 25th. For a full list of exhibitors, guests, gaming schedules, and programming, go to www.windycitycomiccon.com. That's Comic-Con spelled comiccon.com. Windy City Comic Con, Chicago's only comic book convention.
Make sure to get pick up your free poppers near the Greg Louganis
right by the Liberace Forest, exactly.
A free Hungry Bottom with every purchase.
So, and two of our podcast partners are here.
I hope you don't mind on Word Balloon. I am saying Word Balloon and Rock Comics Presents just because I've been asked.
I sent you the script that way. Good. You can.
Thank you.
And Comic Book Queers do the same thing. You guys
that
are all part of it.
Work. The show.
Work?
Yes.
You mean I can't just glad hand and do what I usually do?
No.
You,
damn it.
John, you're at the registration table from 12
6 a.m.
to 2.
From 6 a.m. till, I know, we announced that it's at 10 a.m. I'm like, can we start at noon? Do I really have to wake up early on a Saturday, man?
No, I wanted to get out of there at 6 so we could go drink.
Okay.
There's a method to the madness.
All right.
Well, now that we got all the
Eric
business,
Eric and Steve will tell us where we can go.
I was going to say, manhole doesn't open until 7.
In all seriousness, though, I think it's going to be a great show. I think we have
absolutely
a ton of great people lined up for it. Bunch of vendors, publishers, all sorts of.
And honestly, if we can toot our own
horn, we're
going
to get free gifts. You get first 500, right?
But look at the A-list sketches you can get from this show. Seriously, Gene Ha, Don Kramer,
Scotty Young,
Tim Seeley, Norton. Honestly, that's great.
The rest of them are Reinhold, busy going to Norton.
Reinhold is like the sleeper in that group, Bill Reinhold, because
awesome.
I'm telling you, he is still such an amazing draftsman and was so
Hillary
absolutely. I mean, that's what I'm saying. So this really is.
We're going to have about 40 or so artists.
Over 40 creators.
It is crazy. So, this
gymnasium.
Is going to, it's always fun to look through the bins and try and find cool back issues and, get a deal and stuff. But, from an art standpoint, I am amazed.
And it's $5.
Art.
$5.
And it's only $5.
And make sure to come to the Battlestar Galactica panel.
We are going to, yes.
I'll be on that if
I will just make up stuff about a show I don't watch.
Well, Sal had started to mention it. We've got publishers from all over the country that have gotten on board, and for the first 500 attendees, they're going to be getting a gift pack that's going to be filled with new comics, free comic book day issues. Top Shelf is putting their awesome seasonal sampler in there. You're going to get
stuff
buttons.
Ape Entertainment, Avatar, I think DDP, mm-hmm. a bunch of publishers.
Yeah. And
throwing stuff in for us to give away.
One lucky person will actually receive Larry Hama will be in a bag.
Larry Hama will be in a sealed.
This is great!
That's a door prize. That's a random
draw. More than $5 worth of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're getting your $5 back before
you
walk in.
Show up.
Yes.
Yeah. You're an idiot.
So if you're in the tri-state area, by all means, October 25th.
Yep.
Saturday.
It's going to be a good time. Well, I tell you what, we talked about comic book conventions. Let's talk a little bit about comic books. We've been doing the whole kind of top of the stack, not top of the stack, but...
talking about top of the stack. Don't ever mention top of the stack again.
Tom, what have you been reading?
When am I top of the stack?
God
damn you, Tom.
But literally, it's literally on top of all my other. All
right. Well, then I give you a pass on that.
There's no quotes around
all
it.
All right.
It is Fables number 75, part 3 of the War and Pieces storyline from Fables. It's an extra big issue. It's like 64 pages for $5, and it's sort of the wrap up of the longest running sort of storyline in the Fables book, which is the war against the adversary. So they kind of wrap it up in this. So if you don't want it to be spoiled, I'm going to explain everything that happens in Fables from the beginning, the first issue.
Holy shit.
Issue 75.
I'm going to go have a cigarette. Yeah,
I need to go.
It's, of course, written by Bill Willingham. With art by Buckingham and inked by Leah Loa and Andrew Peepoy, who's a guest.
Yes, he is.
Nice.
And they do an interesting thing in this issue in that they have a very consistent way of telling the entire story, which to me was almost my favorite part of the story, was that it was all told in panels that go all the way from the top to the bottom, that start off thin and then get wide, and then they do it again and again and again, and sometimes they go the full length all the way, and it really created this great atmosphere in the book of moving things along very fast, almost to the detriment of this book, I think, a little bit.
Really?
I think if there's anything negative I would say, is that it kind of felt like Willingham kind of rushed through the big climactic war that you've been waiting for, almost as if he's really interested in tell the next set of stories. So
the
they got to
that important.
But it was cool because you had a major death. You had a death of a major character. But of course, being a fable, they can always come back.
Sure, as long as someone believes.
You see, you know, Bigby, who's my favorite. When people say that like Batman could win any fight or Wolverine would, it's Bigby from Fables who beat both of them. For Sam, kids love the big bad wolf. Are they?
He's the ultimate anti-hero.
Exactly. He's more badass than Wolverine.
I love
Snow White. He's gotta be cool.
Wolverine's a little girl compared to Bigby.
Especially the Mark Millar's Wolverine.
Oh yeah,
like the pussy.
Pacifist.
Pacifist.
I like that run.
Pussy.
I like it too. But
Bigby would chew him up.
I'm just stating a fact.
And then when Bigby's done, he goes and does Snow White.
It's kind of like when Sal looked through my my music collection this
pussy.
Week. Yeah, you were just stating a fact.
I can only imagine.
Oh my god. I don't even. Like, we
knee
can't
deep,
even get into that.
Knee deep in jug bands.
Holy shit.
Deep in jug bands.
All I can say is no.
Wow. The
man. No man should own 5 Sarah McLachlan. No man.
Oh, lesbian trapped in that box.
Obviously following the Lilith tour a lot 15 years
Jesus
ago, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife, she remarks quite often that she married a lesbian.
Jesus.
Wow.
Well, that's
anyway, back to the that's a weird aside to take off to. It's very much a wrap up of everything that's been going on so far in the book. We see that the I'm not going to spoil who the adversary is if you haven't read it, but eventually everything sort of gets resolved, and the new status quo is set up that now that this war is over, there's all these magical lands that have been under the rule of someone for 1,000 years. They're all now going to just do whatever they want.
Crazy.
And that's sort of the bigger problem that's obviously going to preoccupy.
Well, that was always my fear with the book, is that it's like any other big epic story, is that once you get done with the major conflict, what do you do now? And
yeah.
So it looks like there is something.
Iraq.
Now you have Iraq.
Yeah, you have
tribal,
exactly.
Quagmire
and a quagmire.
Yeah.
But it had all the hallmarks of the really best fable stories, where it has, you know, Boy Blue is super heroic and Bigby is a badass, and even Prince Charming turns out to be, you know, a very selfless hero, even though he's very manipulative.
Wow, that's a big change for the character, absolutely.
Well, I don't know. And his story arc, he's always been. He's an odd character because I see people talk about Prince Charming like he's a villain.
He's a cat.
But when it comes down to, like, for the betterment, what's best for everyone, Prince Charming is always willing to, like, you know, get right into the thick of things. And I'm excited to see the next story, what he's going to do next, because even though I love Fables, I definitely got the feeling that this was coming to an end and that it was going to be good that we now change things up. We're not going
to
go
on to the next.
And move on to something else. But, you know, it is a book that literally, when they say everything's going to change after this issue, well, everything is going to change after this issue because everything did change.
Cool. Excellent. The thing I've always been impressed with Fables is the design of that book as a former graphic designer, web designer guy. I've always just been so impressed with the design elements that they, you know, put into that book. And
the borders along the panels.
Just all the different things that they take into account when laying out the book. And like you were saying, from this issue, just the idea of how they did the panels all vertically and changing the pace of the story throughout, you know, with that layout. There's just a lot of care taken in it where you don't necessarily see as much
and
of that in other books.
A rare thing for a Fables book is a lot of big action spreads. You know, you very rarely see like a
True.
Big, but in here, you know, flipping through, there's
wow.
pictures
yeah.
giant of
burning
giant
rockets,
yeah, giant ships burning, and Bigby biting the emperor, and a big scene of all the characters. So
that's
they definitely
page.
Broke out sort of all the stops for this issue of like giving you a big epic ending to. I mean, it was only three parts. It was sort of like the war, and maybe that part of it is I'm so used
to
reading comics.
That war's they've been building towards.
Yeah, and it was actually a very interesting thing.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
it was a very interesting thing to see once they actually got into doing it. How technical Willingham almost went into how they went about winning it, which was really interesting, but also the hard thing to balance when you have the real tight like. You don't want it to just be a book that's all like here's strategy.
The documentary of the war.
And he does a good job of balance. Sometimes it kind of slips over a little bit. I thought the first couple slipped over a little bit on the wrong side, but he kind of corrects it in this last one by giving us a few more chances to see the characters actually instead of just explaining how they're doing it. But it was really cool and really enjoyable. And I don't suggest this being the first issue of Fables that you pick up because you won't get what's going. On at all. But for those people don't I get the feeling sometimes that people don't talk about Fables a lot because a lot of people read it in trades, so it always gets sort of short shrifted. So I was like, this is good, I'm going to talk about this, and everything else this week wasn't that great, so
there you go.
There's my half assed Tom, like, this is the best of what I wrote.
To me, it's two creators that have been around for a long time reinventing themselves too, because Willingham had that great run with the Elementals back in the 80s, and Buckingham had made his name coming in with Gaiman and doing so much stuff on Miracle Man, among other things. And I really think that these are two guys. They're not old farts or anything, but they're not young guys either.
Sort of in the second act of their...
Absolutely, that's what I mean. And they've really taken their art to in a different direction. And it used to make me laugh. And I've said this before about, you know, Bill Willingham is this great new writer. And I've read message boards saying, where did this guy come from? And wow, he's really my favorite new writer. And it's like, yeah, exactly. It's like, God, I've been writing the guy for 20 years. He's awesome.
There's also great pinups in the back by, you know, Eric Powell, Kyle Baker, Kevin Nolan, Darwin Cook, Eric Schanauer.
Do you read Jack as well?
I don't read Jack.
Jack is great, and that's what I was going to say, too, is really the Fable family of books. The two books are amazing because I think Sturgis has really come along as a writer as well, co-writing with Willingham, Matthew Sturgis.
Yeah.
And you got Tony Akins and Pete Poy as well. I mean, they're just these great revolving art teams. So when the load is too busy for Mark, you know, Tony Akins can step in and do an issue here and there.
Yeah.
And I really think it's where they are respected is at conventions, because have you heard those San Diego panels? I mean, there's a lot of love for Fables in the Vertigo world.
Well, Sturgis and Willingham are doing one of my other favorite books right now, and it's House of Mystery.
Absolutely. Well, now it's the Sturgis.
Is Willingham not doing the...
Yeah, he's not. He hasn't been on
I haven't
the
read
last
this week's
two issues.
And Tony's got a story coming up in House of Mysteries.
Tony Akins.
Yeah,
great.
Absolutely.
Simply Matthew Sturgis now.
Wow. Well, it's
all wrote up.
It's a great book. I love that. I love that series. Just walk right by, you know, I never know what to say. Never say it. La, 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 la.
Mr. Salazar, and I'll just say it's not wrong for a man to like Sheryl Crow, but what is your
do?
Sure, sure, she's not.
Fun.
I haven't been reading
a whole lot.
Yeah, I kind of did. No, I mean, I've.
Why
I've been
are you even
some,
here then?
I don't know. I just showed up to make fun of Chris. Really.
You're not doing this.
No,
job.
I have. I did read over last weekend, the holiday weekend.
Yeah.
I spent a day doing nothing but sitting on the couch and reading some comics. And I actually reread the Sinestro Core War. I had gotten both the hardcovers.
Yeah.
And I went and just sat and read them both back to back. And I really enjoyed it when I first read it in the single issues. But man, reading it all together in one sort of sitting really sort of shows you how Gibbons and Johns worked together on that story as a whole, and how tightly sort of plotted both of those series, Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, were for that story. It was, to me, easily the best event book that has come out in I don't know how long. It's so well done. It's self-enclosed.
It's like a sleeper.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, it was just really good. You know, for an event that is a Green Lantern book, for Hal Jordan to really not be the focus necessarily of that story. I mean, in the end, obviously, he has a big part of it, but the majority of that book, he's not really, you know, it's not really
just
focused.
Him.
Yeah, it's not just him. It's the entire Green Lantern core and, you know, the...
Is it Sodom Yet? Is he the Daxamite?
Sodom Yet, the Daxamite.
What I really respected about that series was that I was able to, as not a long-time Green Lantern fan, to jump in. I had read Rebirth, which was awesome, but I was able to jump into the Sinestro Corps War. Wasn't lost. It was just a great outer space war story.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You know, people talk about jumping on points and all that. Sinestro Corps.
Oh, it was great jumping on because he sort of reinvent not. He doesn't reinvent the whole Green Lantern Corps, but he reestablishes the whole Green Lantern Corps and sort of their responsibilities and
their
duties.
Their purpose.
Yeah, that was a good word. And also, you know, sort of
and shakes
gives
it up,
a lot. Yeah, like, shakes things
shakes
up,
it up, and puts
and
it
also
on its head.
Gives a lot of stuff to work on in the future with it. I mean, you know, what he built in there is going to go on for a long time, hopefully.
And unlike other events, there's an ending to the Sinestro Corps War.
Yes.
Which is great,
yes.
But again,
there's
with
resolution
the tease,
to it,
with the tease and
of
promise
things
of,
to come. Yes.
Well, it's still the Empire Strikes Back of his trilogy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Supposedly,
and we're in that I guess Shadows of the Empire period right now between
nerd and
universe. Yeah. How many heads just blew up right now? But no, it's cool. And
I have a great story about a Gamorrean guard.
I guess it's time for me to name drop, but I did. I just talked to Ethan Van Sciver a month ago, and
cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
There we go.
But no, it's the amount of time he spent designing these new aliens. He had a blast
there's
doing
so many
it, and that's the great thing.
Great
about
character design.
Yeah, and I know that it will continue on in the Blackest Night as well. And if you haven't heard, his role has changed. He's kind of like John Cassidy was with Astonishing X-Men in terms of
late.
To avoid it. But no, in terms
Blackest
of
Night due out given, in 2014.
He was given carte blanche to kind of design a lot of characters and stuff specifically for the story. He won't be able to execute the actual issues, but he is kind of the art director,
right?
Coming up with the concepts and stuff, which is going to be pretty
cool. Do you
know
who's going to be? Is it going to be?
I'm assuming it's Ivan Reis.
Reis. Because I have to say, as much as I like Van Sciver, Reis or Reese, however his stuff
he's good.
In that was phenomenal.
And Gleason.
And I was
Gleason,
saying,
yeah,
Gleason, absolutely.
Was great. Yeah, absolutely. All the artists involved in it were great. But I actually think I like Reese's stuff better than Van Sciver's at some point in it.
It's cool. No, but and honestly, this idea of the different colors of the spectrum representing different lanterns and their purpose is really cool. And also, just like great moments. Like, come on, the yellow ring finding Batman.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just like which that, just a great geek moment, you know, isn't it?
Unfortunately, it's not in either of the hardcover. It's not in
no
the
way.
First hardcover.
It's in one of the one-shots.
It's a one-shot, but they didn't include it in the hardcover.
That's a great moment.
And they talk about it in the very beginning of the first, but it's not. That actual story's not in there. I was disappointed because I wanted to see that again.
And the nod to the Action Comics Bizarro
story
as well. Yeah.
You got the Yellow Lantern Bizarro.
The character designs are phenomenal. But like I said, the story, the plotting of that story, if you read it all in one sitting, how it just absolutely, you know, you have the Green Lanterns, and it's basically Hal and Kyle and John Stewart and Guy, who's probably the best Guy ever written.
Yeah, they've been writing Guy very well.
Oh, yeah, it's just fantastic. And then you have the Green Lantern Corps, which is a huge cast of characters. But the way that it just seamlessly went back and forth between those two stories and meshed everything together in the end was just fantastic.
Who was your favorite Sinestro Corps member?
Well, he wasn't in the initial Sinestro Corps run, I don't think, but the two-headed...
The one from the most recent Mambo.
I like Crib,
the one with all the babies in it.
Yeah, that was fucked up. That was bizarre.
I like the virus.
The virus, that's
my favorite, actually.
That was pretty good.
I really came to enjoy the cyborg Superman character.
Henshaw.
Yeah.
That's a sympathetic character to some degree.
Poor bastard.
I did like seeing Anti-Monitor.
Absolutely, as
a Sinestro Corps member. That's the thing. Awesome.
It was this big event
happening
in two books.
Yeah,
and that's all you needed.
And
really, you could have even leaned on the Green Lantern book and had a satisfying story as well. You could have just read both.
That was the great thing about it, is that you could have just read the Green Lantern book and been fine. You could have just read the Green Lantern Corps book and been fine. But reading them both together really did add a lot to the story, and it worked so well together. So,
what color lantern would you be?
Red. Red.
Teal.
Probably.
Angry.
Be red.
Red,
what about you?
What
would you be? Sort of a moth.
Do they have a puce?
The indigo lantern.
Spreading
fashion color.
Yeah, I love that about the mythology of the Green Lantern Corps, that was such a great direction to take it, and it was just really imaginative, and it was great.
Well, it was just like, wow, why has nobody ever thought of that before? It makes so much sense.
Perfect. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I don't know. I hope they get rid of all of those aliens. Just have one guy with a ring.
And the Mexicans.
I don't know.
Hal Jordan, and that is it.
It's lame to have all kinds of cool-looking aliens.
Yeah, that's horrible. You don't want that.
It was just Kyle for a really long time.
I did like the...
That's what I meant.
That's where he's going.
I did like the opposite of... what's his name? The trainer of all the Green Lanterns.
Kilowog's
opposite.
That guy was
pretty vicious.
On Quard. Wasn't it Quard?
And Sinestro, for the first time, I thought was like a badass.
Yeah.
I always thought Sinestro was kind of goofy. He looked like
Charlie Callis.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he really did.
But in this, he was, you know, brutal and vicious and scary.
Well,
Ethan
really, I think, took great pains to not only design a cool new costume for Sinestro, but facially, he looks like Hitler. He does.
That first page, whenever they show the Green Lantern scars
on his back.
Oh yeah, that Kyle.
That Max Cady Cape Fear moment.
And then it was Kyle that did it.
Yep.
It wasn't even Hal.
Exactly. That's the greatest. Yeah, the greatest insult of all. That it was. Yeah, the least.
The rat. As he calls
the rat. Exactly.
Super rat.
Yeah. Classic.
Nice to see Kyle back as just a Green Lantern. No more Ion. No more. Or whatever the fuck he was supposed to be, the torchbearer. Just Green Lantern. Just another Green Lantern. He's just another Green Lantern.
Hey, man. Make him a Green Lantern.
Yeah.
I didn't have a chance to go through all of my books. Yes, I didn't have a chance to read this. It looks good.
Got a great cover.
No, it's because of the Labor Day. Because of all my con planning. In between writing an article, sitting in on 11 o'clock, and Labor Day weekend, so book ship late this week.
Downloading Sheryl Crow albums.
All of us
to the Sheryl Crow library.
Wow! Everyone, drop your side projects.
Hey, man.
I'm writing a song
time
right
to
now.
Get fired up.
Okay, but, mister, I'm planning a wedding.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm calling it off. Everything. Focusing on this
I'm
show.
I'm married to one thing. Well, that's round
that's dedication.
This show needs to be the most important thing.
All right.
You're thinking about centerpieces. Come on.
A book that I've really been looking forward to, and it was the first thing I read last night and really did enjoy it, was the first issue of Secret Six by Gail Simone, Nicholas Scott, and assorted other fine creators, but we'll focus on those.
Did Hazelwood ink it?
Nicholas Scott.
Was that inked by Mr. Hazelwood?
Doug Hazelwood on inks. Jason Wright, which I actually did want to talk about because I thought that the issue was fantastically colored. I'm paying a lot more attention to colors these days. And,
why?
I got something to say about colors, but we'll get into that later.
I don't know. I'm just starting to gain an appreciation.
I barely even pay attention to the writers and artists.
It's just letters. Just the letters. Right?
The editors.
Oh, no, it's the editors.
Oh,
it's all editors.
Do all the real
do the heavy lifting. The editors are the superstars, so I figured that I should just be following
them. Do the heavy lifting now, man. Yeah.
For those unfamiliar with the Secret Six, this came out of Villains United.
Which was very good.
Oh, which was probably my favorite.
Whatever crisis that was.
One of the Infinite Crisis lead up miniseries. It's basically it is in kind of a there's a core group, but out of the six, I think there's, four of them that have been kind of there since Villains United. And these are kind of B-list, C-list, F-list villains that have kind of gotten together, and not to do the right thing, but just to... they're anti-heroes, but they're not heroic.
They're just silly.
In its own way, it's kind of its own take on the Suicide Squad, and I know that Ostrander came back and did a new Suicide Squad, but...
But these folks are definitely mercenaries. They're out to make money. They kind of, by
accident...
They're not
really villains, because they're not... I mean, they don't do...
Well, it's like the Bad News Bears.
Well, no. They talk about it. The issue, though, is that there's nothing redeeming about Deadshot.
No.
He's not a good guy.
He's not, but Catman.
They're not heroes.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
You know, Catman's
but they're not
great.
They're not robbing banks and like they're not
unless someone hires them to rob a bank.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they will.
Yeah.
And well, they have their own code. They have their own morale, much like the Rogues in.
They do
in
have a certain code. I mean,
yeah,
but
they do, and there is some loyalty. Sometimes that loyalty is challenged within the group.
Yeah,
but it's. The individual characters that make up the Secret Six, it's great. It's a great group of characters that you took for granted for years, and Gail's made them incredibly interesting.
And Catman is definitely the lead of the series, and I think a favorite character of both Gail and Nicholas. So he's with Deadshot, and they're in their civvies, and here's Deadshot?
Yes.
And here's a question. And Catman's starting to have a crisis of conscience. And he says, "Well, let me ask you a question, Lawton. Say a 6-year-old girl is lying in the street, lost. Would you stop to help her?" And Deadshot's response is, "Well, I guess I wouldn't go out of my way to run her over intentionally, if that's what you're asking." these are the conversations that they have as Catman is kind of starting to feel like he's on the fence of being a hero or a mercenary.
I think that's interesting because when I read that, Catman, see, it's not just like Catman's like, oh, I feel bad about being bad. You don't get that he doesn't care. He doesn't care about hurting people because he does it all the time, you know, when he thinks it's not necessary.
Yeah. Okay.
When he thinks it's like in his own way of handling. Well, I don't even know if it's. He's a very different character, because I don't think he is just this guy who's now having second thoughts about being a villain, because I don't get the sense that he really is going to turn back.
Thinks of himself as a villain?
Yeah, I don't ever... Or the fact I don't think he's ever going to give up just being really violent.
Yeah.
You know?
Being violent isn't necessarily being a villain.
No, but I mean being... Like, when they walk away from the robbery, and he's not... It's not in him to be like the good guy.
Yeah,
because
right.
even Lawton says he's not, he forgot.
He's not heroic.
Whatever. Yeah, you forgot about the. You just left a bunch of like
skinheads
in with two potential witnesses, and you didn't even think about it. Like.
Yeah, he's like,
Cameron's like, oh yeah, like he's trying to be like it's not in him. He's not good.
He's not a good guy.
But he wants to hook up with Huntress.
But I'm trying.
But he's like, oh, I should be, because it's like it's a complete intellectual question with him. Because he asks, why am I bad, and other people
he's
are good.
He's ruthless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But trying
all,
to be.
Well, it's all intellectual.
Yeah, though. Yeah.
He's
it's
all
not.
Like,
yeah,
why
it's an exercise. His natural tendency is not to be a good person. But he's trying to be a good person, even though his natural instinct is to be a very ruthless and brutal person.
One of the things that I think y'all
which
are
is kind of heroic in its
you know,
own way.
This guy written by Gail Simone, he's written to be sexy.
Yes.
He's written to be appealing because, you know, you have this guy who's really vulnerable and, you know,
confused
and has this internal struggle. So he's got this, like, kind of wounded thing going on, but then it's built like a brick shit house.
Thanks, Nicola.
Gail definitely turned him, I mean, because he was a laughing stock of a character.
He was fat. He was out of shape.
Yeah. She turned him into this,
fat,
this
second rate. Badass,
hero.
I can't remember where it might have been. Cape last year, Cape 07, down in Dallas. But at one point, you know, Gil was talking about Catman, and it was really
real turned on.
Well, kind of. She talked about him with this real like, and you know, she practically meowed like when she said his name. Yeah, it just she's created this character to be. Sexually attracted to.
Yeah.
He's like a big fucking
cake. Yeah, beefcake fantasy. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think she said in a panel that.
I think that's what they wanted to call it.
When they
fucking
when
post.
Fucking post six.
Yeah. I think they first announced it in New York last year or something like that. And she said that she and Nicola had already been looking for. They're already creating reasons to get him shirtless.
Oh, yeah.
But what's really great
thank
about
you,
that
Gail.
Too is that.
We love you.
The villain that they introduced right at the beginning, that new villain, Junior, mm-hmm. that was. One of the creepiest beginnings to an issue that I've ever read, where I was just like, "Whoa, that is."
Talk about the man in the box.
The man in the box.
That's what's great about Gail. Gail is like one of the coolest writers in comics, and I always say that because she is. And it's not. She's not one of the coolest female writers in comics. She's one of the coolest writers. In comics.
I don't
it's
even.
She's married. Back off.
I'm well aware, and I love her.
Jerry Ordway.
Jerry Ordway.
Keep in your pants, stud.
No, but she is. She's. In the previous to build on that, in the previous miniseries, there was that great scene where you don't know what Savage's daughter is eating, but the comment is "Shut up and eat your Grundy," and he suddenly realizes green meat that they're eating is like pieces of Solomon Grundy and stuff. I mean, that is like cold shit.
She's a sick.
So yeah, she's
person.
No, she's cool.
I haven't read the issue yet, so I don't know, but the man in the box, is that any reference to the girl in a refrigerator kind of thing?
No.
Just wondering. No, this is very Tales from the Crypt kind of freaky ass
and Ragdoll is really funny.
Ragdoll is the sleeper hit character in this book. He's always the comic relief.
I still missed the header.
The header was great. Hey, man, there's only room for one freak in this
universe. Yeah, that was a great ending.
Yes, it was.
Kicks out of the helicopter.
Yes, it was.
There's only room for one freak in this group. So I really enjoy it. Nicola's art is fantastic. It's definitely it's Nicola. Did I mispronounce her name again?
Nikki.
Eggdog. Art's fantastic. It's definitely a hook of a first issue. I think you'll immediately be looking forward
to
issue
two. Is Doug Hazelwood a woman, you think? Is this an old
Doug Hazelwood?
Yes. Doug.
What I love, too, is, like, for years, it's been, you know, like, when those miniseries came out around Infinite Crisis, and they had plans for all these various books, you know, Day of Vengeance became...
Shadow Pact,
right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, hey, we really like Villains United. Yeah, we know you do, but we got other things going on. We're going to get to it. I'm sure we'll do something later. No, we really like Villains United. We want a book. And it's like, finally, DC, listen. I mean, this is a book the fans have...
I would love to see this have a really nice, like, 75-issue run, I think would be awesome.
I'd like it to go longer, but that's fine. I want it as long as Gail has time for it, and I hope that they make a lot of time. I think she's
I don't think that book would last that long. It's hard to have...
really, really, really wanted to
It's hard to have a book filled with CD...
I hope
F-list characters go that long.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's
an issue where they fight the rogues.
Catwoman couldn't last...
81 issues.
I think this is different, and also it can be. It depends on the stories you write. Hey, man.
I'm not saying it's not. I loved Villains United, and I'm glad to see Secret Six coming back.
I love these characters.
I'm just saying, you know, just the reality of
I think it's a different. I think it's a different age. I know exactly what you mean, and I can appreciate that from like a single villain and stuff. The fact that it is a team, and you have chances of other people coming in. The way Gail took over Birds of Prey.
I'm rooting for it.
I mean,
man.
That's what I'm saying. I really think the DNA is there for this to be a long run. Yeah. If she's allowed to do it, if she wants to do it.
Yeah, Birds of Prey. Birds of Prey is a good example that has a bat family connection to it, and I think they're already trying to hook the bat into this.
Is it the next issue?
It's the bat and the cat. Aren't they doing that in Batman Confidential?
Yeah, yeah. Not nearly enough Batman.
All right, that's enough for mine.
for me,
I can't get enough.
Eric,
Batman.
What have you been reading these days?
Okay, Morrison's Batman. Girls, can we talk about Grant Morrison for a minute?
Uh oh,
yeah,
Sal's gonna get all freaky.
Grant Morrison.
I hate him.
Okay, and I feel like if I were 10 IQ points up from where I'm at now,
no,
I'd be
it's
fine.
Not, it's not an intelligence
I think
issue.
It,
anyone
sweetie,
can
I
write.
Think it might be.
No,
you I've
could
got
write,
bad news.
You could write. anyone could write something and make it ambiguous. Ambiguous.
I think we found our problem.
Ambiguous, and that doesn't make it intelligent writing.
Well, here's my deal. I finally picked up. In spite of myself, picked up my Trade of the Invisibles, which has been sitting on my shelf forever.
Yeah.
And finally, it was that, like, oh, fuck. Finally. Like, I've run out of anything to read. So I pulled it off the shelf, and I started it. You know, and I've tried to pick it up before, and the exact same thing happened this time where, you know, I'll get probably like an issue or two into it, and I'm like, this just, it isn't, it's too heady, it's not interesting, and it doesn't have enough of the standby comic book stuff that kind of keeps me coming back. Like the thing, I was just talking to Stevie of Comic Book Queers. I was talking to Stevie about this. You know, Geoff Johns, I really enjoy his writing because he'll take those typical comic book conventions and delve more deeply into them.
Right, where, stick to continuity.
Exactly. And Grant Morrison deconstructs them. And I don't like it. I don't.
Yeah, I mean,
did you read his Batman J.H. Williams story where it was all the Batman of many nations and stuff?
Oh, I love that story.
Did you dislike that? I didn't read it.
One of our co-hosts on CBQ is a huge Grant Morrison fan. Brett loves Grant Morrison. And it's, so, you know, he brings in his issues. I thumb through them. I don't get it. I don't. You know? Even as I read his X-Men run, which is the thing I enjoy the most that he's done, it still feels like he's taking something very fragile and kind of fucking it up.
Let me take a habit of that.
Well, it's just kind of. It's not an intelligence thing. It's the thing, though, with comic book fans of, like, you feel like everyone should like... It's the perfect comic thing, like I keep saying. Like, there's somehow someone's going to write some comic that's so good that every single person's going to love it. Well, that's just not... It's not. I mean, it's not true.
Well, except for Brian K. Vaughan, but...
I think Grant Morrison has already written the perfect comic. It's called All-Star Superman.
And yet,
that is the perfect comic.
I didn't, that's what everyone loves.
Watchmen's obviously the perfect comic.
I give Grant Morrison a pass on a lot of stuff. I've read pretty much everything that he's ever done. And I like a lot of what he's done. With Final Crisis, I think it's an issue of... I don't want to spend the time necessary to get out of that story what... I would have to.
Dude, the Kirby omnibuses are awesome.
Yeah, I don't want to have to read Fourth World and World's Finest issues from fucking 40 years ago to understand why Mr. Mixelplick, or whatever the fuck his name is, is in this book.
Well, you know,
I don't want to know why Sonny Sumo wrestler
Sal dropped some knowledge on me today. Why is Mixie's Kittleplick a part of Final...
Because he is... The half in back in fucking World's Funniest issue number.
What issue of Final Crisis was Mixel Pitlick in?
Yeah, I haven't. I don't.
Maybe he wasn't in Final Crisis. He was in the.
No, he was in Superman. Batman was the last time.
No.
Well, you go ahead and we'll
he's
play
in,
some.
So.
But he could be. This is this.
No. He's in one of the tie-ins.
Go ahead. But go ahead and...
You show me.
Well, go ahead and give your premise, anyway, and maybe I'll remember what tie-in it was in.
He is half of the anti-life equation.
Ah. Interesting.
I don't know. That's
interesting.
He is. That was revealed back in World's Funniest Issue, something or another, that he is half of the anti-life equation.
But Morrison has been doing this. Like in his
I'm trying to remember. I can't
his RIP storyline.
It's not in Final Crisis. Maybe it was something leading up to Final Crisis, Revelations or something.
But Morrison is pulling stuff like in his RIP storyline. That's something that happened in like Batman 113.
Right.
This World Z or Z World.
But the thing is, you would think that that would be a tribute to continuity. You would think that that would be a tribute to continuity. It's not. It's not. He deconstructs it. You know what I mean? He takes something that's been around and he pulls it apart, stretches it, and literizes it. You know?
I embrace the challenge. I do. And Final Crisis, all three issues, it took like four or five reads for me to really understand.
That's what makes you. That's what makes you the sexual dynamo that you are. However, the rest.
Speaking
for the Velveeta eating white trash out there, I can tell you,
hard hat, the hard hat club.
I don't get it.
Hey,
I
don't get it.
I think Grant Morrison is a great writer. I don't think this is his best writing. I think when he does this type of writing where it's very, you know, sort of convoluted. It's not heady. I don't consider it heady. It's convoluted. It's you know, it's subtle beyond the point of making any sense.
Okay. Like Darkseid, the flaming Darkseid thing, which Stevie had to tell me about an hour and a half ago. It's fucked up.
Did you read Superman Beyond?
Yes.
What'd you think? Tell me.
I thought it was.
Yeah, I've only read it once, so I don't understand it yet.
And I didn't really think anything of it because there's. I mean, I don't. Quite honestly, I don't think there's that much there,
ladies and gentlemen.
I read Superman Beyond, and I got to the part where the monitor is like, "Hey, come with me. All existence is in trouble." Mm-hmm. And then from that point on, I was like, "Huh?"
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I mean. It's not heady. It's
and those
not like
fucking 3D glasses didn't help at all.
No,
they didn't.
See, but the thing is that when you listen to everyone talk about it,
you tore them out of the book.
See, here's the thing about these. Here's the thing about these conversations, though, is that one person, whenever you hear someone go, it's funny because someone will go, like, I thought it was good, and someone's like, I didn't think it was good. You're never going to convince.
No, I'm not trying to.
No, I'm just saying that's how it ends. That's, okay. That's how.
I'm just saying.
I think I'm talking about in general, when people talk about Grant Morrison, it's like people talk about it like, oh, I'm going to tell you something that's going to make you like this
and
book.
It's not true.
No, no. It's not going to happen.
Well, the thing is, you can know that something's good and still not like it. Doctor Strangelove, like one of the best films ever, couldn't sit through it.
Love that movie.
Yeah, people love that movie. Love that movie. And I just,
oh, well, now
I
you're just full of shit.
Don't you never to call me here.
I just think...
No,
I just,
kidding.
My own personal taste is things that are much more efficiently written.
Say more.
I like more efficient writing. I think that's harder to do than writing
tighter.
Something.
Set up,
yeah.
Well, nothing's more efficient than just showing something
simple.
And not explaining what's going on. Which
it doesn't
really
have to be
traditional.
No, not even traditional.
Well,
just efficiently written where the information is given to you. It can be done very subtly. It can be done in many different ways. It doesn't have to.
Did you like his Animal Man run?
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't think it was amazing. I liked it. I mean, you know, he did some interesting things in there, but quite honestly, I think it's overhyped a bit.
I enjoyed good Morrison for me, and this is probably not a good road to go down. I think his efficient writing is something like We Three.
Yeah, We Three is fantastic.
Sure.
Oh, that's great.
Sure.
It's just my personal preference. I like efficient writers.
Do you think you know enough about Superman, though?
Hemingway is a phenomenally efficient writer that writes extremely subtle things also. I mean, his work can be very abstract and very subtle, but it's extremely efficient.
But All-Star Superman is picking up strands of very obscure early Superman issues.
But I don't need to know any of it to enjoy the story.
The
Final Crisis, there's nothing really there other than... I mean, there's nothing to enjoy other than that.
I still think it's a mystery, and I could be wrong.
The thing is, though, and this also comes up when people ever talk about events...
I'm not saying this is what you're saying, but when people, they buy the big company event, and they're like, I don't understand what's going on because I haven't read any DC Comics, or I don't know. Well, it's like, to be honest, that's probably not the
right
the
story for you.
Yeah,
yeah, but
yeah.
That's I've read plenty of DC Comics.
I'm just saying,
because I don't read stuff from 40 years ago and understand where that might tie into this one panel. That's different than I can understand what you're saying.
But what I'm saying is, okay, you come in and you say,
if you don't like DC Comics, why are you reading Final Crisis?
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
no, absolutely, yes, yeah. I understand.
Or like with Secret Invasion.
But I do like DC Comics.
No, but it's the same thing. The flip side happens with stuff like, I was just telling Centrist the same thing about Secret Invasion. I can't read
on that.
I can't read any of the Avengers tie-ins because I don't know, I haven't read any Avengers before, so none of the tie-ins. And
right.
There's people that may love those, yeah, and that's great, girls. But I...
And I don't get me wrong, I've liked the three issues of Final Crisis, yeah. and you know, it's interesting, but I don't consider it necessarily brilliantly done.
I grew up early chapters though, and I think it's the mystery has to kind of solve itself.
So wait,
and
are you giving it 1 star or 10 stars?
Well,
is it the best thing ever,
tell you,
or the worst thing ever?
We can talk about this.
We can
talk about this until the sun goes down.
Or not?
Is it shit?
Yes, exactly.
I tell you, maybe we'll carry this discussion over to next week because I think there's so. I tell you, actually, we'll come back to it. We have to talk to a guest here. So,
okay. Is it Grant Morrison?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Sal, fuck you.
He sounds high.
Fuck you.
And plus, Grant Morrison is just clearly fucking insane. I mean, have you ever
Yes.
Have you ever seen the man speak?
Yeah.
Well, he's insane.
Well, he's like rolling
24/7.
Yeah.
And he's nuts.
He's fascinating.
That's fine. Mm-hmm.
You know, and from a guy,
I know a lot of crazy people,
from a guy who likes Hunter S. Thompson,
okay.
Very interesting. And I mean that, and honestly.
Certainly, I don't like
very
this crazy drug riddled bullshit stuff that people all trumpet.
But here's the thing.
Like,
wow, yeah.
Writing.
Okay. I like it is.
The drug,
I like
the drug
it is.
Thing bothers me, Doug, because Morrison hasn't actually done drugs. And whenever I read a review that's four lines long, in a while.
Okay.
Yeah,
in
the last 6 or 7
there.
Years.
Bitch, please.
Okay, well, I said
he's
did a lot at some point.
I'm not saying this about
brain
you.
Is
I'm not saying this about you, but
head.
I've read reviews where people's review of a book is just like, this is obviously from some... He's
acid
obviously
trip.
On acid. Well, he's not... That's a
halfway
stupid
magic.
Halfway around...
That's better than fucking acid.
Well, halfway around the world, he's waking up right now in a pool of his own sick.
I can't. Yeah, probably.
He's like,
ooh, he drinks
not.
Like a fish.
And he's
all right, all right.
Spell
all right,
on YouTube.
Is really sweet. And I want to make one rule though.
Okay,
yes.
Go.
You cannot
last,
proclaim
last
someone
word.
A genius unless you are a fucking genius. How's that?
Oh, that's out of the
that's
whole David Byrne discussion I had this week.
Salma
should
never declare anyone a genius.
No, ever. I can never declare
who's a genius. Then who gets to call this?
I don't know. Well,
is it Alan Moore?
Yeah, I want to see the IQ test. I don't know.
Yeah, really. Get Stephen. That man is a genius. That's Stephen Hawking's.
All right.
Yeah, you can't do
Stephen
anything.
Hawking's genius.
All right, enough. Enough.
Stephen Hawking
right.
loves Grant Morrison. So. He understands Final Crisis.
He probably
may. Well, I would like to
Superman
say
Beyond.
Does.
Superman Beyond was like an issue of a...
Are you calling now?
Oh, no.
Right. Are you calling
Jesus.
Right now?
Yes.
Oh, we have to stop the show.
We have to call.
So we can
tell.
So we can
this is Stephen Hawking.
Jason Howard.
Grant Morrison is a genius.
Let's go.
I will tell you why.
Let's see what Jason Howard thinks about Grant Morrison. All right, we are now joined on the phone by the artist of The Astounding Wolfman, Mr. Jason Howard. Jason, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
All right, just wanted
thanks
to...
Thanks for getting the adjective right, by the way.
the Astounding Wolfman, and it is astounding. I guess the first question is, are you going to have your own manifesto for us this evening?
Sure, yeah. I've been putting one together. It'll probably go online tomorrow.
Okay, are you doing the close-up on just the headshot?
No, I'm not that pretty to look at. I was thinking about hiring an actor, and I just dub in my voice or something.
Just voice it over. Yeah, for folks that don't know what we're talking about, The Astounding Wolfman is written by Robert Kirkman, and when Jason you got in touch with him, he said, I'd love to talk with you. I don't have any manifestos for you, so gave you a couple weeks to work on it. Well, I tell you what, Sal and Tom are in the back parking lot arguing about Grant Morrison right now. So so we've got one of our pinch hitters here on the panel today is Eric from the CBQ podcast, and he was actually just walking around the shop and saying, Chris, do you have any recommendations for me? And I said, what are you reading? And he says, well, you know, I've really been liking Invincible lately. And I was like, well, hey, you know what? We're getting ready to talk to a guy that is doing a book in the Invinciverse, and that's of course the Astounding Wolfman.
Quick, do your research. Quick.
Right. Got it open in my lap.
I figured it's a perfect opportunity because there's probably a few people that are listening as well that haven't read the book yet. Why don't you go ahead and tell Eric why he should purchase this beautiful trade paperback that just came out.
All right, well, I feel a little pressure before I start, because without Tom there, this isn't going to be the funny part of the show. But, you know, I'm not that funny, so I guess we'll just have to kind of skip that.
Well, we'll put out the Tom call and get him in here before we wrap up.
Maybe you can insert some little clips.
Yeah. So no pressure, Jason. You must be funny, and you must sell your book to us.
That's right. Well, I guess if I were to sell it, I mean, the main hook is werewolf superhero, so that's kind of the direction we're going. When Robert and I were first talking about it, his concept to me was, you know, I want something that's kind of between Invincible and Walking Dead in tone, and I think as the book's developed, it's mostly closer to Invincible side as far as some of the superhero stuff than the Walking Dead side, which is more of the drama and human stuff, which is fine with me because, you know, the superhero stuff is fun to draw, and people standing in a prison for a lot of issues is probably a little less fun to draw.
Yes, there's no prison in Astounding Wolfman, so don't worry. Well, you know, reading the book, it really does follow a lot of Kirkman's kind of his storytelling style, and that is to introduce a new character who is kind of thrown into maybe not a superhero life, but is thrown into a crazy situation, whether that's finding superpowers or waking up and into a zombie infested world, and it's something that a style that he's developed, and we as the reader are able to follow this character as he or she starts to learn about their powers, learn about the world that they now live in, and then kind of a Kirkman trait that Wolfman also picks up on is just as you think that you figure the story out and know which way it's going, he turns it over and puts it on its head. So that's something that for a lot of his books that's been kind of the hook for that, and Wolfman follows that along.
Yeah. So you're selling the book. I don't even need to.
I try, man. It's what I try and do. One of the things about being in the Kirkmanverse or the Invinciverse, whatever folks like to call it, is the ability to have those characters come in from other books, and you know it's stuff like Invincible and Brit and Jay Ferber's Noble Causes and Dynamo 5 and all the books that kind of are connected very loosely, just to a point that it develops a fun little bit of continuity. But yeah, how much fun is it for you knowing that any of those characters that exist in that world can pop into a script that you get to draw?
It's a lot of fun, particularly Invincible, which, plug, will be appearing in issue 11 of Astounding Wolfman, a big crossover issue. You know, I was a big fan of Cory Walker's artwork back when they did the Super Patriot miniseries at Image, and I picked it up because I was a big fan of Dave Johnson's original Super Patriot miniseries back in the 90s. So when Robert and Cory launched Invincible, I didn't know either of them. I was just a comics fan trying to get some comics work, mm-hmm. and I picked it it up just because I liked the art, and then the story in it, it got me hooked. And so to be able to now kind of draw some of those characters, and I've had a couple opportunities in Wolfman or in that Pax book I did with Robert to draw a couple of his other characters that I was familiar with before. And that's, you know, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's like anybody who, you know, saw something they liked and then later gets a chance to work on it, you know, it's pretty awesome.
Sure.
But there's a little bit of pressure because I'm like, oh crap, I don't draw anywhere near as good as Corey or Ryan, or, you know, I gotta, you know, do something to kind of make it my own, but still, you know, not have it someone say, man, I should have got that other guy to draw.
Yeah, you know, it seems like just having a copy of this book in my hand, it seems like your style is really congruent with the Invinciverse look.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if that's something that you really had to think about to make it sort of congruent with the other things going on, or
not really. I mean, that's kind of the way. Now, I there's a couple different styles for me drawing, but when I started Wolfman, I had a full-time day job, so this style was more achievable for me as far as getting the artwork done punctually. And I think it probably worked maybe a little the other way. Is, you know, I don't know, but I assume I know from talking to Robert that him and I share a lot of similar favorites in artists. And as do Ryan, or as does Corey. And, you know, I think maybe Robert's choice of me, or thinking I'd be a good fit on the book, maybe lends it, you know, kind of comes at it that way. So Robert tends to like artists who, you know, have certain influences or look a certain way, and it just has kind of worked out that way. But I don't know that it was an intentional choice. I mean, it wasn't on my part. If anything, I think there's a little more pressure for me to kind of look, I don't know, a little less simple and a little more detailed, or a little more, quote, mainstream, whatever that means for comics.
Yeah, do you find yourself like, oh man, I need to start drawing more like Ryan Ottley, which is that's a dangerous path for an artist to walk down. It's you want your style to be your style, but there is definitely, you know, I feel a connection between those books that I can pick up Astounding Wolfman or Invincible or Brit with what's going on there, and you know, I don't want to use the term house style too much here, but it definitely has a house style feel to it, which is good for me as a reader, because I don't feel lost going from one book to the other when they are all supposed to live in the same universe.
Right. And, you know, when I first saw Ryan's artwork, I mean, or Corey's for that matter, I was already drawing kind of the way that I draw. So, mm-hmm. Not that I can't or haven't, you know, looked at them to see how they've handled things, but, you know, I was already, you know, fairly developed. My style was already fairly developed from other, you know, sources. And in talking to them as I've gotten to know them, you know, you can tell maybe we share some influences, mm-hmm. You know, back there somewhere. So
nice. Do you have a favorite character in the book? Is the Wolfman your favorite character to draw?
Yeah, I like drawing Wolfman in costume, you know, a bit. And in some of the issues I've drawn recently that haven't come out yet, he's not in costume as much for a little bit. And that's fun, too, but I'm like, I want to draw him in costume again. So, and then I like drawing robot stuff, so there have been a couple of robot-y styled bad guys that I had a lot of fun with, and they may be coming back at some point, too. So.
Yeah, I got to think that there's a lot of pressure in drawing something like the Wolfman. It's so part of our pop culture consciousness that
right.
you had to make some pretty deliberate design choices. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, thanks for putting, you know, pressure. That's just what I needed, a little more.
Okay, be funny. Don't forget, be funny.
And be funny, yes.
That's right. No, you know, when I first started doing designs, you know, it's kind of the choice. Do you go for the Lon Chaney, hairy man kind of Wolfman, or do you go with more of the snout-type Wolfman? And I did a bunch of sketches kind of either way, and kind of talking with Robert, he did a sketch that appears in the sketchbook section of the trade that's kind of fun to look at, but he kind of went the snout way, and as I kind of developed some stuff, I kind of thought that seemed like the way to go. You can get, you know, when he's mad, you can really show all the fangs and teeth, and, you know, that's kind of the visual hook for the character. You know, Ghost Rider is a flaming skull, you know, and chains, and, you know, every kind of superhero character has their hook. You know, Spider-Man's got lots of webs, and, you know, Wolfman is teeth and fangs, or claws and fangs, I guess.
Yeah, and it's cool because he's a Wolfman, but he's also a superhero, so I think it's the first time I can recall seeing a wolf man in a superhero costume. So that's what was the actual costume design a lot of fun?
Yeah, it was actually. That's, you know, I played around with a lot of stuff, and, you know, Robert's got a lot of feedback on stuff, and he's, you know, now who knows how many, you know, characters have appeared in Invincible as far as like costumes that had to be figured out between him and the artists. So my kind of approach was, you know, the main character was wealthy, so he had resources, so when he became Wolfman and decided to use that, you know, werewolf, quote, power to be a superhero, you know, I figured he'd kind of be a Batman type where he's got all this money and these resources, and so I tried to make the design of the costume more industrial feeling to maybe kind of contrast his more, you know, animal, you know, looking self.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the costume is the most human thing about the look of the Wolfman, and his face is really canine, obviously. And it really, I'm wondering if you kind of had, if you have a dog around and you just sort of studied it, or how that worked. Cause,
no, I wish I did.
Yeah.
We'll go get a dog.
He's bugging me for a dog. Maybe I could write it off on my taxes.
Right. Hey, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what kind of work did you do before Wolfman?
I was a art director, I guess. I worked for a large corporation, their art department, for 11 years, so I started doing, like, production artwork and packaging design, and you've probably seen some of my stuff in grocery store aisles and on foam coffee cups at McDonald's and Burger King and those sorts of places.
Nice.
I'm loving it.
You see my stuff in the pen aisle. That's what I do, man.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. So you do the packaging and stuff for pens?
Well, I worked for, there's personal information here, I worked for Sharpie for several years, so I did a package redesign for them. So I know exactly what you're doing. So you're doing funner stuff now, man.
So yeah, that was the stuff I did. And, you know, on the side, I do little comic things here and there. And every now and then, I get an itch and really crank out some sample pages and send them off to Marvel DC, thinking I'm gonna, you know, do comics full time. And, you know, that never really went anywhere. So I've got the typical stack of rejection letters that most artists have. And, you know, working in that environment, I think, impacted my style a lot, because there's certain types of looks and things, and, you know, a lot of people ask me if I do my artwork in Adobe Illustrator because it has sort of that look, and I don't. I do it by hand, but I worked in Illustrator doing a lot of logo stuff and packaging stuff, and, you know, for several, you know, for all those years, so that look just kind of soaked in a bit, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It does have a, I don't want to say a computerized look, but they're definitely very heavy lines and sharp corners and angles and stuff, so it does have a very illustrator look to it. This is my attempt to be funny now that Tom's not here. Do you ever have people walk up to you and say that they loved your work in Dead at 17?
Yes, I do. there have been reviews online. It was funny. I did my first book I did with Robert was the fourth issue of the Pact miniseries from Image, which I think like 15 people saw that. And so I was all excited, though, because I got to color it and, you know, do everything. You know, Robert was like, do as much as you want. And I was like, sweet. My first, like, kind of big-time comic, and it's, you know, with Robert, a writer I respected, and I got to do all the art on it. So after it came out, I'm, like, hunting online for reviews, you know, and one reviewer just hated it, and he's in the review, he called me Josh Howard, and then he began to compare how my previous style in Dead at 17 was a ripoff of something else, how I clearly evolved, but now I was just ripping off someone else, and, you know, it was pretty funny, I thought, you know, because he obviously didn't know who, take the time to know who drew the book, but, so I showed my wife, I was like, look at this, he doesn't even know who drew the book.
And, well, he actually got to pan, he got to pan two different artists at the same time.
Right. So I I've never met Josh Howard, so I don't know. Maybe he deserved it. Maybe he didn't.
It's a fun little book, but it is a completely different art style. So I actually, you know, the first time I saw the solicit for Astounding Wolfman, I took a double take. I was like, wait, no, that's Josh Howard. So I thought for a second it was like, wow, that's an interesting pairing for Kirkman to have.
Yeah, I get that a lot. I'm like, maybe I should have done the, you know, three name thing, you know, Brian Michael Bendis kind of approach. So my name stood out more.
Well, what's your middle name?
Ronald.
There you go, Jason Ronald Howard. It could work.
I think that's the guy you get insurance from.
But people think I was a director.
Yeah. One of the very interesting things about Astounding Wolfman is how you guys premiered it, and it was, I think, the first time this has ever been done, but the first issue of the series was a free comic book day offering.
Yep.
And how was that? Was that very successful? Did you find that was really a great way to launch a series?
I mean, it's hard to say until, you know, unless you were able to, like, compare doing either way, you know, and I don't have a ton of experience launching books. I know Robert seemed happy with it. I mean, you always want the numbers to be, you know, higher than what they are.
Sure.
But we were very pleased with the response of the Free Comic Book Day issue and the following issues. I think what maybe hurt us a bit early on was because of my day job, and Robert had some commitments at Marvel Comics, we couldn't go to a monthly schedule right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, the Free Comic Book Day book came out, and then there's a little bit of a break, and then a break between issues, and so that I don't think was an ideal way to follow up. But, you know, I know Image printed a ton of them, and, you know, people I talk to seem to think it was a, you know, like, I see a lot of people at shows who've seen the first issue and haven't seen the other ones, and therefore they're immediately somewhat familiar with the book and maybe willing to give, you know, further issues a shot, or hopefully give the trade a shot now that that's out. Or,
sure. Yeah, and speaking of the first trade is now out. It came out about 3 weeks ago, three, 4 weeks ago. It's a great way to get to jump right into the series, because I think you guys were just about caught up in single issues with whenever it came out. So
issue 8, it collects the first 7, and mm-hmm. issue 8 should be out any time. I don't know the exact schedule. I've been done with it for quite a while.
So there you go. You can pick up the trade and jump right back into the single issues. And, you know, I would tell anyone out there that if you do enjoy anything in the Invinciverse, whether it's Invincible or Brit or any of Jay Ferber's work, that this fits right into there. It's a lot of fun. It's just a good new twist on a superhero comic. So it's one that I look forward to and enjoy quite a bit.
Thanks.
All right.
Every now and then there's a little bit of blood.
Yeah, well, about every other page, it seems like. There's some very bloodthirsty characters.
It's a fucking werewolf. Come on.
Exactly. And there's a vampire. I shouldn't give away one of the little twists in the book. So just tell folks that to pick it up, and there's lots of fun little happenings in it. So in addition to Astounding Wolfman, is there anything else that we can look for coming from Jason Howard?
That's all the comic book stuff I've got going on right now is Wolfman. Doing a little bit of toy design and some animation design stuff I can't really talk about, but Wolfman is it for comics, and the other stuff is pretty, you know, small on the side, doesn't take up a lot of time. My main focus of my days is either drawing Wolfman or drawing my sketchbook, trying to get better. So
awesome. Well, it's I don't think you have that far to go, because it's a beautiful looking book, and like I said earlier, if you like the art and the other Kirkman Image line books, you probably will gravitate to Astounding Wolfman. Well, Jason, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us.
I enjoy listening to you guys. It gives me something to do while I draw that's actually entertaining.
Well, I don't know how entertaining. Tom,
yeah?
come say hello and goodbye to Jason. He was he felt put on the spot because he was going to have to be the funny one while we were talking.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was outside arguing with Sal when it started, so I couldn't walk in. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, real good.
Yeah, that's good.
Sal and I were having a fist fight outside about Grant Morrison.
Oh, good. Or who was on the good side and who was on the bad side?
I thought he
was on the evil side.
I thought he was great, and Sal thought he was just good.
Oh. Outside of We Three, which I love, he's been hit or miss for me.
All right, I'm going to have to come fight you too, Jason Howard. Where are you?
I'm a couple hours away. I'm in Michigan.
All right, I'll see you at 1 in the morning.
All right.
I'm hopping in a car right now. Let's go.
All right, bring it on.
Who's giving me a ride?
No, I'm not. All right, Jason, thank you so much. We'll be in touch and hopefully see you soon.
I'll see you in a couple hours.
All right. See you later.
I'm going to punch you.
All right, I want to thank Jason Howard for talking with us. And now, are you two done arguing about Grant Morrison?
Never
be done. But
never be done.
We have a ceasefire at the moment.
Nice.
I do want to make it clear, I'm a Grant Morrison fan.
He's not.
I don't hate, it's not like I hate Grant Morrison's work. And I think he is super creative.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just
don't always.
I just want to be Grant Morrison's editor. That's all. That's what it comes down to. I want to pull out the greatness that is inside him.
Sal said, "I quote," and I quote Sal when he said, "I think he might be a terrorist." And I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure he never gets to the U.S.
Terrorist.
Again. The fact that it's Scott that gets to touch Superman.
I think he's a fantastic talent. There's just some things about his stuff.
You. There's nothing wrong with that.
He's making a jerking off motion while he's saying that.
You stop putting jerking off motions in my mouth. Whoa, wait.
Oh, yeah.
Good thing Eric's here.
Thanks for tuning into CBQ.
It is.
That was a very CBQ comment.
It's around comic book queers. All right, let's wrap this puppy up. I want to thank everyone for leaving an iTunes music review. It's a great way to support the show. Thank you to Juggler, Calico, Soviet Warchild, Leju Scara, Comic Book Ed. Thank you, Comic Book Ed, for having something I can read. And B-Town Matt. We'll have more of those next week. So keep leaving them. I look for them every day.
Fuck you, Magazine Brian.
Who's Magazine Brian? Did he give you a bad review?
He's Comic Book Ed's arch nemesis.
Nice.
In the bizarro world.
Tom versus the Flash.
Yeah.
You got a schedule? Or is
it comes out like twice a week.
Okay.
Three times or twice.
Oh,
I say three like that. That's never going to happen. And those stories, there's like two in every one. So I have to
switch gears?
I have to, because John Broome and Robert Kaniger are completely different. Kaniger's obsessed with aliens, and John Broome's all about villains with silly get-ups. So I have to, switch gears.
Sound like a match made in heaven.
Nice. Word Balloon, anything coming up? The Bendis tapes should be all taken care of by the time this
thing's
done.
You're finishing up your show, right?
That's yeah, exactly.
Gonna be it.
Yeah, that's all he wrote.
Because we're going to focus on this show.
Exactly.
Everyone
right.
Finish your
I'm
show.
I'm taking your words to heart, Caters. I'm dismantling Word Balloon just to come back here and support the cause.
Well,
I got John Hickman coming up talking about Secret Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And also Jeff Parker talking about all of his slew of books that he's got coming up for Marvel.
Good. Can't wait Parker. For Agents of Atlas.
And that is certainly one of the jewels in the crown of that conversation.
Can you tell him where can you ask Jeff Parker where I can pick up? Because I wanted
Interman?
To pick up, no, Agents of Atlas hardcover.
God, I wish
they are. I was bringing it back in print because of
the
series. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic!
I was gonna say I got one. I'll sell you.
I was gonna pick it up from him in wherever the hell we were at.
Seattle
somewhere.
Much like
much like Secret Six, a book that the fans
demanded come back.
And
I love
it's Dan Buckley, the guy who said,
"Mary,
we really need to bring back Agents of Atlas."
That's awesome.
Thank you, Dan. Which is very cool. Yeah. Thank
Otherwise, I would have sold you mine for a special price.
Shut up.
Fucking privateer.
Yeah, no shit.
Over here,
along with some Watchmen comics that I stole from a 3-year-old.
Is that true?
Put on eBay. And
no, I didn't steal them.
God, that is gross.
But I did get a hefty little profit off of eBay.
You're part of the problem, my friend.
What? The guy that
speculator.
Bought him is part of the problem. What's going on with CBQ these days?
You know, I really want
to. You guys still gay?
All the time, baby. Every chance we get. And, I wanted to plug him.
I saw the gay signal in the sky.
I really, really want to plug the next episode of CBQ.
With what?
We're going to be interviewing Cher, Jesus, and Nelson Mandela.
Oh, wow.
It's quite quite a blowout of a show.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh.
He said plug and blowout.
Excellent.
So, oh, this could be bad.
You guys.
Fucking homophobe.
Oh, what? Like. Like, you're I'm a offended. Lesbian. You're
yeah.
one of them.
Yeah. You own five Sarah McLachlan albums.
Yeah. Slow and down, Lilith Fair.
Doc Martens, oh, absolutely.
And blue shirt. Vinyl. He has got blue vinyl, like limited edition pressings.
Well, I do it, so maybe I'll get an invitation to sit in on the CBQ cast. Oh. You know, come on. Hey. I'm a card-carrying member now.
How many podcasts do you want to be on?
He is Lilith Eastman.
I am on 11 o'clock comics every week with...
This one's fucking falling apart, and you're all over the place.
With,
Vince, that was a goddamn mess.
Vince B., David Price, and Wood. You can find that 11 o'clock comics every Thursday or Friday whenever it gets out. And I also write a weekly column on ifanboy.com called Comic Shots, where it contains...
What a whore!
Yeah, for somebody that... You probably do more work in the comic book industry and make no fucking money than anyone I know.
It's true.
I don't think there's a harder working, less paid professional in comics than you.
You're a slut. Horse get paid.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you can find that every Thursday. Every Thursday morning with a drink and comic book recommendation.
Is
so.
Bourbon month almost over?
It's week
it's
three.
It's never over, Tom.
I was just glad that it got away. One drink was just bourbon and ice, pretty much. Like, we're getting to the point where, like, the drink's going to be, like, a straight bottle of whiskey and, like, five essentials. And just hole up for the weekend.
Just get a funnel. All you need is a funnel.
Hey, last week's had an egg in it.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's right. Rebel Yale.
It was good. You read. Yeah, all right,
Rebel
thank you.
Yale.
All right, want to thank everyone for being here today. John's top of the stack will be next week. So
that's awesome. Ran along.
So Eric from Comic Book Queers podcast, best way to find you guys?
www.comicbookqueers.com.
All right, great. Yeah, Eric, thank you. John, as always. Tom, Sal, will continue the great Grant Morrison debate next week. Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. Remember to go to WindyCityComicCon.com. Pre-order those tickets for the comic book convention. Everyone have a great one. We'll be back next Monday with another full-length episode of Around Comics.
Grant Morrison just needs to hire Tom to explain his stories to
I've been saying this. DC needs to hire me just to go around and tell people stuff.
Everywhere in. Thank you, John.
Around Comics.
Should have ended at 200.
Literally for Chris. He is everywhere in Around Comics.
Is that any money?
That you can't make money. Anywhere in comics you cannot make any money.
Getting so tired.
Conventions, podcasts,
articles, fucking Jesus.
Golden brown, texture like sun, lays me down with my mind. She runs throughout the night. No need to fight, never a frown. Golden brown. Every time, just like the last, on the ship, tied to the mast, to distant lands, takes both my hands, never a frown with golden brown.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.
Through the ages, she's heading west. From far away, stays for a day, never a friend.